see a picture. I'm good with... Why don't... Like, every single time.
Hi, Karen. It's Alzheimer's, but they forget to tell you. Episode 42. Oh, my goodness.
Raise the roof, raise the roof. Raise the roof, raise the roof.
She starts. Are you watching, Mon?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
So we have.
Because I might get feedback or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you're right.
Okay.
I'll watch it after.
So we have a guest today.
Yeah, introduce.
I can't, because you should.
Why? No, you.
Mon?
Monique.
Yes.
I call her Mon, but her name's Monique. Lee. L-E-E, not Leed. You know, we all can't be fortunate. Okay, all jokes aside. Okay, Monique is going to come on. She's on the phone right now. She's going to talk.
Hi.
And she's going to talk about caregiving, but in a different, not for somebody who has Alzheimer's or dementia, but her daughter, Christina, has. Okay, you go ahead. Because I probably will not know exactly the diagnosis that she has.
Well, she has a very rare disorder. It's called cardiofaciocutaneous syndrome. There's about 500 of them documented in the world.
Wow.
So it's very, very rare. Very little known about it. And she suffers from seizures. She has a G-tube. She's nonverbal. She does not walk, so she's not mobile, and she is totally dependent on somebody 24 hours a day. If she's not in the room with me, I have a camera, which I watch her from, or in school, the same thing. If she goes to camp, which I have, I'm entitled to respite, they also have her one-on-one, so she requires a lot of help.
So tell me something. You said you're entitled to respite.
That's correct.
But how much respite?
Well, they pay me. I get a fund for respite.
Hold on. So for people like myself or anybody else, kind of just tuning in, what is respite?
Well, it depends on the degree. Christina gets full respite.
Some kids don't.
Wendy doesn't
even know what respite means.
Okay, so respite means that I could hire Karen or Wendy, anyone I trust, to come over here. The government will pay for you to help me with her.
So it's like babysitting.
Right.
Okay.
So... free babysitting.
Okay, got it.
I have that. So they give you that. They allot, see, and everybody's amount is different depending on the degree of the illness of the child, right? And it's different for adults versus children. Christina gets about $10,000 in respite fund a year.
That's not a lot of money.
It's not really when you're paying $20 an hour or, you know, it's not. And finding the right person, and to find someone you trust, it's a lot. But that's so she's entitled to that. Then she also has a camp that she can go to. There's a few of them. They're not really camps, sorry. They're called respite homes. There's a few of them. There's one in Cambridge. There's one in Halton Hills. Those are the ones that are closer to me. Yeah. But they're all over there. Bourview, which is in Toronto. But she goes there, and she'll stay there. Like, she was just there a couple weeks ago for 2 weeks. So that was her summer camp. So the government tries to help in that way because trying to do is for you. The goal is to keep your children at home.
So is that part of the $10,000, or is that on top of, like, if Christina goes to a respite camp?
Well, before it was not, but now she's considered palliative.
Okay.
So the campus considered her palliative, so now it's free. It doesn't come out of my respite fund. And she also gets more hours.
Okay, Karen.
Now, as I say palliative, she's not as the word we know as palliative. It just means they've just basically deemed her palliative because she has deteriorated a bit, and she does under their criteria meet the standards for palliative, but it's not the typical palliative.
How old is she?
She's 16.
Okay, Karen, this is for Monique's daughter, so this is not somebody who has, I don't think it's the same for somebody who suffers, like for our moms. I don't think there's a respite fund that we can apply to that supplies like the government. We have to go through the LIN, which is the Local Health Integration Network. We can't go through, it's different, I think. Children and
I go through LIN too.
Do you?
Mine is now is part of LIN as well.
See, like I don't know if it's different now, but we don't have, according to what I know, there's no fund. You just get allotted hours depending on your loved one's functionality and what supports they have already in the home. So like, you know, I don't know if you've been watching, but because Karen's mom Karen's parents are obviously living together and her father is there, she gets minimal hours because they just expect that her dad should just do most of the care for her mom.
Okay, you get a little bit more leeway, but as she gets older, there's less respite.
Okay, and she's how old?
I believe that is what I've heard. She's now turning 18 soon, so already I am starting the process, actually just this week, of switching her over to the adult program.
Right.
Which will be different rules, and it's I wasn't specifically told exactly what that entails, but she will be. As I said, she's 16, so she'll be 18 in a couple of years. But the process takes that long to switch them over.
And what do they expect you to do in the meantime?
Well, I just continue under the same program that I am involved in now. And then as she turns 18, bang, it's different.
So
but I'm not sure the exact details of what that entails. Or he said we'd go into more detail as we get more involved in the turnover.
So this is pretty much, I mean, in terms of understanding this properly, you are her primary caregiver.
That's correct.
And you have been in this role from birth.
Correct.
So you're
exactly.
Not able to have a job or to leave the house or to...
I can't. No.
Got it.
It's impossible. I'd be fired in a minute. I've had to...
Yeah.
I was in and out of the hospital, especially just a couple of years ago when she's been in two medically induced comas. She had a two... It first started when she was about 7 years old and she had suffered from a 2.5 hour seizure, which caused the brain injury, and that slowed her down a lot.
Okay, so because I'm not familiar with this at all, this is like I'm learning this today, and me being in the position I'm in right now with child, so I know that there's a bunch of screening and stuff that has to take place.
Correct, yeah.
So when you were in that position in utero, did you take those tests? Did you find out that there was an issue then, or was this something that came to be once she was born?
No, it was spontaneous. It was a gene mutation. They knew something was wrong by the measurement of her neck in their 18-month ultrasound. I don't know if they still have that now. But 18-month ultrasound, they realized there was red flags. One kidney was a little bit bigger than the other. I don't remember the exact details, but but the neck is the one thing I remembered. It was measured a little thicker, which usually is a sign of Down syndrome, but they knew something was wrong. I did an amnio. It came back normal because it wasn't her chromosomes. It was her genes.
Oh.
So they couldn't find that. And at first she was diagnosed with the wrong syndrome, a cousin syndrome called Noonan syndrome.
Okay.
And then a few years later, when she had the seizures, they realized that seizures are usually associated with cardiofaciocutaneous syndrome, while the other one, Noonan's, is more, I believe, is associated with cancer.
Okay. Is she your only child?
No, I have three.
You have three more?
I have three altogether.
Oh,
Don't. Let's not go that far. Three was enough.
Okay, got it.
Yes.
And do they all have this issue?
Nope. This is spontaneous. This was a fluke. This is nothing in our genes. It was just Mother Nature.
Okay. And she, Mother your last
nature.
Child?
The other two are fine. Besides being premature, the other two are fine.
And she was your last child?
She was the middle.
Middle?
Yes, my oldest is 25, and then she's 16, and my youngest is 14.
Okay, and so I'm going to ask you a bunch of stuff because not only am I curious, but like I'm just trying to imagine the dynamic of what that must be like for you.
Plus, I haven't filled her in about anything, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
I'm glad to talk about
okay.
it.
Okay. So.
To share.
This is going to be my third, so I'm trying to think right now the dynamic of how the family changes and the home changes once you have been so used to having two, and then you add another one in. And so,
well, I had one. No, I had one first. She's the middle child.
Right.
So I had the one, and they're like 9 years apart. Sorry, that's my brother and I. They're like 10 years apart.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So, yeah, I waited that long. So it was difficult for him. It was as he had a transition, but he was fine. He adapted very well. He was very helpful. He could do her feeds. He could do her meds as an early teen. He was able to do all of that.
So he was
very helpful, but it was very difficult.
Of course. And you being in that role, what made you decide to have another one?
Accident.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't planned.
Yes, that was the third one wasn't, my third boy wasn't planned.
Got it. Okay. I'm in the same boat, so I understand completely
yes,
how that happened.
Yes,
but.
It was, yeah, I had the boy, I had the girl, I knew I would have her for life, or as long as I could. And and they're not that far apart. They're
right.
About 18 months apart.
So
it was very difficult.
How do you juggle the needs of all three when you have the middle one that is so needy of everything that you have or that you have to give?
Well, I have, they have a very good father.
Okay.
So that really helps a lot.
Good.
Unfortunately, it was, a demise of our marriage. I think after 21 years, it was just too much.
Okay.
I began to focus, basically on Christina. And that was my other kids were put in the background.
Right.
Because I felt they didn't need as much care. And Christina, I didn't know, they didn't know. We didn't know she was having these uncontrolled seizures. She still does to this day. But, I mean, to the point where she died because it was her frontal lobe that was injured. So we've been through a lot. I was in the hospital for about seven weeks.
She was.
The first time. But then before that, she was failure to thrive. She had problems since she was born.
Got it.
Yeah.
So you must have been really concerned getting pregnant with the third, thinking that this was a possibility that it could happen again.
You know what's really, really funny, Wendy? I kind of have that blocked out.
Okay.
I just have that part of me blocked out. I don't remember. It's funny, I don't remember, you know, like right now I'm thinking like, holy, I must have been like totally freaking out, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
I managed the both of them, but it wasn't very easy.
Right.
But
because you can't take them out to excursions, you can't go to the zoo, you can't go.
Very difficult.
Right.
Very
okay.
difficult.
Got it.
Very, yeah. Especially when she was younger, and she's G-tube fed, everybody looks at his seizures, you know what I mean? And I think that even though Christina may not be nonverbal, there's definitely, the lights are on.
Yeah.
That's what the doctor exactly used, the phrase one of the neurologists used, the lights are on.
Right.
But unfortunately, she can't communicate.
Like, ever? She'll never be able to do that? She'll never be able to communicate, or does she do that in her own ways?
In her own ways, I can tell when she's fussy, when she's bored, but it's very difficult. But I am working on they have a machine called Toby, and it's a communication device. It's like a pad, like a laptop, and they use their eyes. So you put out, you write out the phrases, and then she'll look at it something, and then it'll tell you what she's saying.
So Karen's asking, and I'm going to answer her, are you a stay-home caregiver mom? Yes, she is.
Yes. Yes. I have to.
Okay, so taking it way back again, so in layman's terms, not even layman's terms, but your opinion, when somebody asks you what is the biggest challenge of being a stay-at-home caregiver mom, how would you answer that? What is your biggest, like the first thing that comes to your mind in terms of your experience, what do you struggle with?
I don't have the communication, you know, when people go out to work, I'm alone, especially if she's at school.
So, it's
a bit lonely.
Yeah.
I find it lonely, and I don't have the freedom.
Oh, yeah.
Most people do.
You don't have the you time either that you need to take in terms of going to a spa or getting your nails done or your hair or, you know, things that you do for yourself because you have to be home with her.
Yes, but fortunately, I have a fiancé, and he can take care of her. So when I want to do little things like that, her father takes care of her. I have my respite worker. I also have a nurse that's in 30 hours a week that comes in at night so I can sleep because of her brain injury. I don't know, Karen, if you noticed this with your mom, sleeping. Is that an issue with her? Because they say that's also a problem. From medications that they take and from brain injury. Sleeping can be an issue.
She wouldn't sleep at night.
Right.
But like now, of course, she as well is in palliative, so she's on hydromorphone, right? So, which makes her tired. So she does nap quite a bit now.
But before she did have problems,
she'd be up all night. So during the day would be a problem.
Do you have somebody come in and help you? Sorry, I'm asking the question now, but do you have somebody that comes in and helps you, a caregiver?
Yeah, I had a live-in for a long time, and now I have a live-out. And then we do get some respite hours where they're not like yours. She gets 14 hours respite a week.
Wow, that's it. Wow.
Yeah, and then, and they don't even have this, but like at the time, they had 30 hours a month that you could schedule, so I have that on top of the 14 hours. And then I do have also a nurse, a palliative care nurse, who comes in twice a week. And it will change once mom gets worse, but she's not on any machines or anything. So if it gets...
But is she G-tube fed?
No. And she has like, a, if I know that typically that's the final stage where she'll forget how to swallow, and I'm not doing that. Like, we're not putting a feeding tube. There's a DNA.
Yeah, you'll just, yeah. Yeah,
it is what it is.
Yeah, I, girl I know, her daughter was getting pretty, was slowly suffering, and she was dying. They just stopped feeding.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though she had the G-tube. That's some of the decisions, I guess.
I know they're tough.
As caregivers, we have to make, right?
Yeah, they're tough decisions because you have to make them fairly early on. Once your loved one is in palliative, like, you have to make those decisions right away. Like, I had to immediately, when my mom went into palliative, that was after a bad seizure, she was in palliative. Like, you know, they tell you, like, you have to, you know, are you doing a DNR? Are
yes.
you going?
You know, I have that decision to make too. Every time I go to, she goes to respite camp. Yep.
Yep. And, also, and for those who don't know what a DNR, it's a do not resuscitate form.
Yes.
And then I had to immediately make funeral arrangements because my mom's in my home. So, you know, you're not, yeah, because you're not calling an ambulance because there's a DNR, right? So to avoid my mom going to, like, I guess, this is, I know, morbid, but to avoid my mom going to the morgue in the hospital, like, it just, like, my mom will just go directly to the funeral home.
I must say, Karen, and I've told you this before, I just commend you because most people would have their mothers in homes right now.
Thank you.
Commend you for that. I can't believe it. I don't know anybody.
Well, it's so
that
I find it really interesting that you say that, because it's always in retrospect when you're sitting back and looking at somebody else's situation. Like, of course, I share the same sentiments as you do with, you know, having all of this that she's taken on with her mom. But then you hear your story, and we sympathize with that as well, because
yeah.
we can't even imagine what that must be like. So then somebody else watching,
yeah.
going through their own
we'll be
thing.
Like, oh my gosh.
You
yeah.
know, so it's
Monique's
really,
story,
yeah,
yeah,
it's like, it's there's so many people out there going through their own journeys that we have no idea what people face on a daily basis. And it's just, that's why I think, you know, these kind of podcasts are really great, because it really just kind of opens up everybody's eyes as to, you know, beyond your own universe of what's going on within your own house. You know, people are really going through real things, and you really just don't know until you ask, right?
And and Monique was afraid to come on, and she's doing great, so I don't know why.
Afraid of what? We don't bite!
She's like, I don't know.
Well, okay, I bite, but not on camera.
But these are good things
to share.
I've seen
some really good special needs moms. Like, what the moms I've seen out there are, like, amazing. It's just what I've seen from sick kids,
mm-hmm.
how devoted these mothers are.
Yes.
It's incredible. Some of
yeah.
them actually live as sick kids with these children.
Hey, those are your babies, man. It's a different type of connection when it's your child. So,
and
you know.
Same thing as, you know, people have said that, but, and Wendy, you've even met my mom, and you kind of know my mom, Monique. And
yes, I do. I remember her
very
well.
My mom would, like, she would do the same for me. Like, what you're doing, she would do, and that's what I know. That's
well, she was a nurse.
Right?
I remember that.
And that's the type of person she was. So it's kind of, makes it a little bit easier to have taken on that role.
So you guys are the real MVPs. And as I say that, this baby in my belly is in my ribs, kicking and, you know, punching and doing all that. So we've got, like, a little cheerleader squad going on here in the belly. But anyway, yeah, you guys are awesome. And hats off to you guys and everybody else going through these type of journeys and doing so without complaining and, you know.
Oh, I complain. Oh, I've had breakdowns, trust me.
Me too.
I'm not going to lie to you. I have anxiety. I suffer from anxiety. I suffer from, you know, I've got myself sick. I have health issues now. It's it's starting to take its toll as I get older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of
and
course.
And I see Karen looking like she looked like in high school, and I'm like, what the hell?
Thank you, but I think I wear adversity well. I don't know what's happening.
She's sitting right beside me. This is what's happening. I'm rubbing the Fountain of Youth off on her. So this is what happens. She gets her daily dose every week. See? You can thank me later.
What?
I can't see, but I can just imagine.
But yes, we're so grateful that you came on today and shared. I'm sure that, you know, the information that you have shared with us today has helped many people.
You need to come on again, and for sure, we're going to go for coffee. I'm going to come to Milton.
Yes, it's worth the drive to Milton.
It's worth the drive to Milton.
All right. Anything else we want to cover?
My book will be out soon.
Which is amazing.
Yay!
Good for you. See, that's something I've done I've advocated for my daughter, but nothing near as spectacular as Karen.
Oh, come on.
Nothing near.
What are you doing?
Nothing near as well, it's just a fight. I'm sure Karen has said everything you do, they tell you it takes, you know, like, or you're going to have to wait a year. And you just bug them and bug them and bug them.
Yeah,
just like
you
I was
to.
Back in high school.
Yep.
And you get what you want sooner, but you have to keep bugging. But
yeah.
Writing books and setting up foundations and setting up podcasts and
bothering her cousin.
Oh my god, unreal! Like I could.
Get the front.
I'm not bothering
I'm lucky
yeah,
if
bothering
I,
me.
You know, get through the day okay. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know how, and the spectacular son you've raised.
Wow.
Just look at him.
Thank you.
Single mom, a seriously single mom.
Yeah.
And Dylan is going to fix those. He's going to become a surgeon.
Yeah.
Neurosurgeon, no doubt.
Those are the blessings, I guess.
Well, I don't know how you, I still don't know how you did it. I still don't. And I rarely say that because I'm in my position and I'm in. So... I don't know, Kara. I've told you many times.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Even my mom has said, wow, amazing.
Thank you.
I don't even get that.
But you know I love your mom.
So did everybody back in the day, remember?
Yes. And she still looks the same. I saw her the other day in the mall.
You think?
Your mom and yeah, they look the same to me.
Well, I gotta tell her that.
Yeah.
Well, you always said she was beautiful. I remember that.
Yep.
But, you know, I don't remember Wendy's mom. That's funny.
You do?
I don't.
You don't?
No.
Well.
But as soon as I saw Wendy, I forget your brother's name. What's your brother's name?
Jason,
how could I forget? That's my first son's
exactly.
name. See what happens? See what happens when you deal with stress like this?
Yeah.
But, no, I don't, I remember him very clearly and Wendy very clearly. They were always around, and Marcel.
Yep. Do you remember that?
I'd have to see pictures.
But do you remember always being around? Like at the house?
Your house?
Yeah.
Of course.
Right, so then that's why, because Monique was just a walk through the park.
And I probably would recognize if I saw pictures.
Yeah,
I was there. I was there
what,
quite a bit.
Weren't you on Newcastle?
I was on Normandy off Newcastle.
Okay.
But you were there quite a bit, too. You were at my house, but I think we were more at your house for some reason.
Yeah.
And your brother, Natty and Dredd, remember that?
Oh, yeah. You have a good memory. Remember... How's Gladys?
Only long term.
Remember
not
Gladys?
Sure. What?
Remember you thought his first girlfriend's name was Gladys?
Yes,
yes.
And I called her Gladys to her face, I think.
And then he goes, last time I heard, she was with the Pips. I'm like, who's Gladys?
Yes, I did say that. Where's the last time? but your brother was a hoot too.
He still is. He still is.
Is he still like that?
Yeah, he's exactly like that. There was an earthquake in Trinidad yesterday.
Yeah, I was reading that on your notes.
And
on your Facebook.
I was like messaging him and I'm like, how are you? Are you guys okay? He's like shaken, not stirred. See? That's just him. It's just how he is.
Oh my gosh, yes. Sarah, see? And Wendy doesn't remember the good times.
And I was young, man. Remember, you guys are like old like dinosaurs.
Do you see what she says? We're old like dinosaurs.
I was young, man. I was young back then. I don't know.
Rude.
Hey, it is what it is. Told you, I'm rude with manners.
That's an oxymoron. Can't be rude with manners.
It's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Whatever.
No, I just have that memory of my brother. You're ugly. I just cannot forget that.
There's no proof, guys. I told my fiance, as soon as I saw Wendy,
I go, you know what she told Marcel? That he was ugly.
Was
and
he, though?
Marcel said, why?
How old is Marcel now?
Oh, okay, I'm 48. He's 9 years my junior. What does that make him?
So he's your age.
No, I'm not, I'm in my 40s yet. Don't rush me.
She's 48, uh-huh. Not him.
Uh-huh.
And he's 9 years younger.
Uh-huh.
So he's like you and I.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. Hi, Abigail.
Okay, let's cut this because we're going to be in the dark soon.
We're going to be in the dark. We're like literally fading. So I will call you, Mon, and we'll schedule, and then we'll have you on again because I think more people need to know. But
I really appreciate it. I was very honored. Thank you very much for having me here. It was like this is like the highlight of my night.
Great.
It was absolutely hilarious because Karen always had me in stitches. Always.
I know.
And
I miss my calling
too.
Of stand-up comedy. It's
yeah,
never too late. It's never
too
late.
I'll tell you stories later, Vlad.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, honey.
All
take
right,
care.
Thanks.
Okay. So take care, guys, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right,
bye.
Okay. Take care. Bye. Bye.